This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM, by mobile app, and on the web at kexp.org. In the November 2016 general election, voters will be asked to vote yes or no on Initiative I-732, a proposal to impose a carbon emissions tax on certain fossil fuels and fossil fuel-generated electricity in Washington state. Is I-732 an effective way to address climate change? What are the implications for social justice? To help answer these questions, I have as my guest Ramez Nam, a committee member of Carbon Washington, a group urging a yes vote on I-732. Besides working for approval of I-732, Ramez is a computer scientist and award-winning author. Welcome.
Thanks, Diane. Great to be here.
What is the goal of I-732? Why is this initiative being submitted to voters in the November election?
Climate change is an urgent issue. Fossil fuels being burnt in Washington state heat up the climate. They also pollute our air and water. I-732 aims to help phase out fossil fuels, encourage clean energy, and do so in a way that's socially just, that uses the money from big polluters to help those most in need.
What is the history behind I-732 being put on the ballot this November? What was your process?
We gathered 360,000 signatures last year, largely done by volunteers. It's a volunteer committee of scientists, economists, activists.
Before we go into more detail, would you give a brief overview of what I-732 proposes?
I-732 goes with the principle that you should tax the bad, not the good. So it puts a fee on the burning of fossil fuels, and that fee is $25 a ton, which is about a quarter, 25 cents per gallon of gasoline, or 2.5 cents per kilowatt hour of coal electricity. That goes up over time, up to a max of $100 a ton over 40 years, which would be the highest carbon price anywhere in North America. And then it uses that money to lower the highly regressive state sales tax, so preferentially helping people at the bottom of the income ladder, to lower a tax on manufacturers that use a lot of energy to keep them in the state, and to fund something called the Working Families Tax Rebate, which sends direct checks of up to $1,500 a year to 400,000 low-income families in the state.
What is the evidence that a carbon tax works to reduce carbon pollution?
We have great evidence. Our neighbor to the north, British Columbia, instituted a carbon tax in 2008, and relative to the rest of Canada, its emissions have dropped by 10% at the same time that its economy has actually grown faster than the rest of Canada's. That's one area of evidence. When you talk to experts, experts see the same thing. James Hansen is the NASA climate scientist who really put climate change on the map. He's a big fan of I-732 and of carbon taxes. Elon Musk, who started Solar City and Tesla, thinks a revenue-neutral carbon tax like ours is exactly the right thing to do.
Would you go into detail about what is being taxed and who will pay?
Yeah, so what's being taxed is the release of carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. Now, it so happens that anything that releases carbon dioxide into the atmosphere is usually also polluting our air, polluting our water, polluting our forests. And it's taxed as far upstream in the process as possible. That means that utilities, when they burn coal or natural gas, pay the tax. Fuel importers, when they import gasoline into the state, pay the tax. And then there's a few exemptions or slow phase-ins. So public transit, buses, ferries have a slow phase-in. Farmers using agricultural fuels have a slow phase-in as well.
How much reduction in Washington state carbon emissions do you expect if I-732 is implemented?
I'd expect over the next 5 to 10 years, 10 or 15%. And over the lifetime of the measure, I'd expect a really massive reduction, perhaps 80 or 90%.
And how significant will a reduction of carbon emissions in Washington state be globally?
Well, that's an excellent question, because Washington state can't do this alone. The real reason we're doing this is to inspire the rest of the country to take similar action. When we look at issues like marriage equality or even the decriminalization of medical marijuana and then recreational marijuana, they didn't start federally. They started in the states. And Washington State was a leader in both of those. So the real goal is to pass this initiative in Washington State and use that as a way to spur people in other states around the country to push their own initiatives through.
How will the proceeds from the I-732 carbon tax be used?
Right now, Washington State has the single most regressive tax code of any state in the U.S., and a lot of that is the sales tax. By regressive, we mean that the people who have the least income pay the highest fraction of their income as taxes. So the revenue from I-732 first and foremost goes to lower that sales tax, and that makes the state tax code a lot less regressive.
And that's a 1% reduction.
So 1% reduction, 1 point. Then secondly, we know that some industries in manufacturing use a lot of energy, and if their prices go up too much, they might leave the state, and that would be bad. We don't want them to leave with the jobs. So we lower something called the business and operations tax on manufacturers. And then third, we fund this working families tax rebate. This has long been a top progressive goal in the state. It's a boost to something called the federal earned income tax credit, which is probably the most effective anti-poverty measure in the country. So we create a 25% match for that, which means that almost 500,000 families in Washington State can get a tax refund check of an additional $1,500.
And after those programs have been paid for, then is it correct that the rest of the money would go into the general fund?
Yes. If there's any money left over, it would go into the general fund, though it's designed to raise the same amount of money from taxing carbon pollution as it is to refund money to the people in the state.
Why have you chosen a revenue-neutral carbon tax rather than raising additional funds to help spur clean energy development and other environmental projects?
It's totally legitimate to think about spending money raised from a carbon tax to spur clean energy or to fund R&D. We chose this in large part to be not regressive. If you raise a tax on carbon pollution and then you spend it on something, then the people who paid that tax have less money in their pocket, and we didn't want to exacerbate that. We also did this to be bipartisan. We think climate change and issues of air pollution and water pollution are incredibly urgent, and they span the political gamut. And so we wanted to send a message to left and right alike that this is not about big government or small government. This is about addressing climate change.
I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Ramez Nam of Carbon Washington. Our topic is I-732, a proposal to impose a carbon emission tax on certain fossil fuels and fossil fuel-generated electricity in Washington State. And you are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on listener-powered KEXP, 90.3 FM, by mobile app, and on the web at kexp.org. You've said a bit about this already, but how will businesses be affected by the carbon tax you propose?
The cost of fossil fuel energy will go up. So that might raise the cost of businesses, but that gives them an added incentive to switch to clean energy, to hydropower and solar and wind. And then we, by lowering the business and operations tax, we hope that their overall costs stay the same.
How much is an average household likely to pay as a result of the proposed carbon tax?
The average household is likely to end up exactly the same. They'll pay $200 or $300 more in energy prices than the carbon tax, and their sales tax will be $200 or $300 lower. For those at the lower end of the income spectrum, those that are working families in the sort of lower income area, they will end up substantially better. Because while they'll pay a little bit more in energy prices, they will pay less in the sales tax, and many of them will get this working families tax rebate.
In what ways does I-732 address social justice issues?
As I mentioned earlier, Washington State's tax structure is the most regressive in the country. It is the most socially unjust tax base in the country that really hits lower income people the hardest. So the number one thing we use this revenue from big polluters for is to lower that highly regressive tax, which helps anyone. And if we think about this from a lens of communities of color and people of color are far more likely to be in that low income bucket and to be spending a higher fraction than the average person on the sales tax. So for people of color and communities of color especially, that sales tax reduction is a great leveler of the playing field and a great boost in social justice.
And also, low-income people may rely more heavily on public transit.
That's right, that we have a very slow phase-in for public transit. So public transit doesn't pay this tax at anything like the same rate, especially for the first decade.
What is being done for workers who may lose their jobs as a result of the carbon tax?
Well, we hope that no one loses their jobs. By lowering the business and operations tax on manufacturers, we hope to keep them all in the state. And this carbon price on dirty fossil fuels will accelerate the rollout of solar and wind in the state and create a lot of new jobs in this state.
The state's Office of Financial Management reports that I-732 will not be revenue neutral as planned, but in fact will result in a loss of revenue, in fact almost $1 billion over 4 years, which would then adversely affect other state programs. Would you comment?
Well, we were very disappointed with the Office of Fiscal Management's assessment. We think they erred in a number of ways. For instance, I-732 puts a tax on coal that is burned in the state and then exported across power lines to other states. And the OFM analysis did not include that. The Office of Fiscal Management double counted the working families tax rebate in the first year. There's also a way in Washington state to burn power, and normally when you sell it, you have to declare, is it coal or natural gas or hydro? But you can sometimes sort of launder it. You can say it's unspecified power. We'll make you guess where it came from. I-732 treats that as coal so that you can't launder your coal electricity. And the Office of Fiscal Management assessment ignored that as well. So we think they just blatantly made some mistakes. But even if they were right, which they're not, the estimate is that climate change costs Washington state at least $4 billion a year by 2020. And we're talking about $150 million a year is what OFM thinks we cost the state. So there's very, very little comparison here. The issue is huge and it's urgent and we need to act. And finally, if the legislature finds that there is a shortfall, they can tweak these numbers. And it's far easier to tweak it in the legislature than it is to try to pass something fresh in a different year.
What kind of response have you gotten to I-732 from the community so far?
The response is extremely positive. What we see is that our canvassers are out in the field right now, ringing doorbells, knocking on doors, asking people, do they care about climate change? And then asking them about I-732. And if you give a three-sentence explanation of I-732, what we see is that people support us by more than a 20-point margin, maybe a 25-point margin. So Washington state wants to act on climate change, wants to address these dirty fossil fuels and clean up our air and water.
Who has endorsed I-732?
Some of the top climate experts in the world. So James Hansen is a former NASA climate scientist. He's the one who testified before Congress for the first time about climate change and put it on the map. He's endorsed us. Mike McGinn, Ron Sims. We have other endorsements from legislators coming very soon. Cliff Mass, who talks a lot about climate and weather. So sort of across the spectrum.
And who is against I-732?
So far, we've had some trouble convincing the Alliance this is a good idea.
And the Alliance is the Alliance for Jobs and Clean Energy.
That's correct. And to them, I just say, this problem is so urgent. On January 1st this year, the North Pole was above freezing. That's not normal. This past summer, last summer, Seattle and Western Washington as a whole broke all temperature records. The forest fires that we had in the eastern part of the state were the worst on record. So I think the Alliance members have some differences in policy that they'd like to see. But what I say to them is join us, help us get this done now, because we won't have another chance to pass something like this until at least 2020. But if we pass it now, we can amend it or tweak it in a year or two.
So what are your thoughts on the Alliance's proposal for addressing climate change?
I think the Alliance for Jobs and Clean Energy has some great ideas. Realistically, though, 2016 is our best chance to pass something until at least 2020. This is a presidential election year. This brings out more young voters, brings out more voters that care about climate change. If we don't pass something this year, it'll be at least 4 years until we pass it, and we don't have that long to wait. So I'd say help us pass this, and then we can amend it a little bit in 2018, which is a lot easier than passing something new.
You are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM by mobile app and on the web at kexp.org. I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Ramez Nam of Carbon Washington. Our topic is I-732, a proposal to impose a carbon emissions tax on certain fossil fuels and fossil fuel-generated electricity in Washington state. What are the chances that I-732 will be passed by voters? What does the polling look like at this point?
The polling looks pretty good. Right now, I-732 polls better than Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump. It polls better than Jay Inslee or his opponent. It polls better than most things, to be honest. So the real crux of it, what we see is that if we can get our message out to someone, if we can explain this puts a price on dirty fossil fuels, it boosts clean energy, it fights climate change, and it returns the money to the people, we win. We win by a very healthy margin. So that's our challenge now, is getting our message heard across the state.
So you see your support is going up as you approach the election in November?
We think it certainly will. We're just starting to canvass now. But as we touch those people around the state, as we literally go door to door to hundreds of thousands, maybe millions of doors across the state, we think we will win those hearts and minds.
Where does your funding come from?
Our funding is incredibly grassroots. Our funding comes from checks written from $50 on up, sort of across the state.
And if I-732 doesn't pass in November, what then?
If we go back to what happened in marriage equality and legalized marijuana, first medical marijuana and recreational, the first efforts there failed. They were good efforts, but they didn't get across the finish line. But they inspired other people to try again in other states and in the same state. So we're going to give this our all. We're going to do our best to win. We think we have an excellent chance. But even if we don't, we believe we'll inspire people across the country to take a similar go.
What would be the timeline for implementation if I-732 passes?
Implementation would start about a year after the passage. The first year, the price would be $15 per ton. The second year, it would be $25 per ton to give some phase in. And then after that, it would rise at 3.5% above inflation.
To what extent are carbon taxes being considered elsewhere in the U.S.?
People are discussing them in many places. In Massachusetts, there's serious discussion, and some other places on the East Coast. In Oregon, there was serious discussion, though it seems like that has slowed down now. So I'd say 5 or 6 states are seriously looking at it. And nationally, I think it's gained prominence as one of the big backers of a carbon tax is Bernie Sanders, who said very clearly that to beat climate change, we need to have a carbon tax.
I understand that there are also countries in other parts of the world that have imposed a carbon tax. Would you comment on those countries and how it's worked there?
Yeah. So British Columbia is a poster child. It's very near us. They imposed a carbon tax in 2008 of about $25 a ton, and that brought emissions down by about 10% relative to Canada while their economy grew faster. Now, British Columbia, I think, made one mistake. They did not set their carbon tax up to continually rise year over year, and ours does. So it rises a little bit faster than inflation. There's also carbon taxes in Sweden. China is now considering and might be about to roll out a relatively small carbon tax. So this is something that has some global momentum.
Why choose a carbon tax rather than a cap on carbon?
Well, we're not opposed to a cap, and a cap has a great moral clarity. The governor is trying to use the Department of Ecology to create a cap, and we hope he succeeds. But when we look around the country and the world, caps on carbon have not actually worked very well. So we look at California, for instance, that has a cap and trade program. When they put that cap, the way that it really has an impact on emissions is through a price signal. As the cap happens, people can trade carbon emissions, and it just ends up as some price. In the first year, the price was $25 a ton, like ours. Now it's about $12 a ton. It's very, very difficult to fine-tune a cap just right. And if you're not ambitious enough, then it has very little impact. And if you're too ambitious, then the price of energy can skyrocket temporarily. And so it's very tough to fine-tune all those knobs.
And would you also remind us why you didn't choose to tax and dividend, which has been another idea out there?
I think tax and dividend is also fascinating. So tax and dividend is the idea that you put a price on carbon, then you take that money and send a direct check to everyone in the state. We had some questions about whether or not the state constitution actually allows us to do that. And I think that if it did, that would be an excellent way to go. In effect, though, what we've done is kind of similar to tax and dividend. We put a tax up, and while we don't send a check to everyone, we send a check to those 400,000 working families. And for everyone else, we reduce a tax they were already paying. So net effect is they have more money in their pocket.
Well, what's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
Climate change is urgent. We don't have until 2020 to wait, and there's nothing else on the table. This year, there's only one thing you can vote on in Washington State that fights climate change and makes our tax code fairer and more socially just, and that's I-732. So we hope we have your support.
Well, thanks so much for being here, Ramez.
Thank you, Diane.
You are just listening to Ramez Nahm of Carbon Washington speak about I-732, a proposal to impose a carbon emissions tax on certain fossil fuels and fossil fuel-generated electricity in Washington State. For more information, check on the web at yeson732.org. Again, that's yeson732.org. The sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters program you have just heard will be on the streaming archive section of KEXP's website at kexp.org for the next 14 days. In addition, sustainability segment interviews are available as podcasts, along with KEXP's music podcasts. Go to kexp.org, click on Demand, and then Podcasting. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in to the sustainability segment again next week on listener-powered 90.3 FM by mobile app and on kexp.org.